T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
That music means it's only time for one thing and one thing only on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Nick Szepkowski, Anthony Herron, proud to bring in publisher of College Football News. You can follow him all football season long at Pete Futek on Twitter. Pete, what's happening, my man?
Is that an actual fight song for somebody that I should know about, or is that just like canned, sounds like fight song music that, you know, doesn't get anybody sued or anything for copyright laws or anything like that?
It's not a fight song, but I'm guessing every HBCU in the country probably plays that at some point during their game.
I was going to go with Akron or something, you know, just a MAC school that I should know, or I'm embarrassed I don't know that it's, you know, somehow really famous or something. I was just curious.
It might even have a little bit too much flavor for Akron, but HBCUs, definitely all of them play that song, that jam, at some point during their games.
Okay. Yeah. That's, I get it now. I'm with it.
Apparently it's got a little too much flavor for Pete, too.
Right.
It's
apparently.
A good one. It's a good
that
jam.
Goes without saying.
Yeah. Little DMX for you with that. Like, it's always that song, or it's always the credits in Drumline. Like the Drumline that goes on there. It's like all college football guests across the country are brought in radio-wise with one of those two. So way to be simple and generic there, Pete. But that's not necessarily...
I'm just asking. It's a learning experience.
The more you know.
We're learning about things. That's what I'm here for.
We want to learn more about what the hell's going on in the Big Ten, because not just football-wise, but if you factor in all sports, it's a good half of the teams in the league in the last 5 or 6 years have had a pretty serious scandal at their hands, Maryland being the latest with the DJ Durkin news. Can you give everybody kind of a 411 on that, the latest, the happenings with that, if they did not see the news of today?
I mean, it's just kind of crazy across the board. Obviously, like you said, I mean, the Big Ten as a whole is just having its issues all the way around. I mean, the dominant force right now continues just to be everything that's going on with Ohio State. Urban Meyer has just sucked the oxygen out of this first part of the college football season, obviously. Obviously, Michigan State's been a little bit of an issue. But now, like you said, Maryland is getting into this, where, you know, when you start talking about things about culture, you know, that's what knocked out Kevin Wilson of Indiana a few years ago. It's what knocked out Tim Beckman from Illinois, is this whole idea, as soon as you start getting into the idea of, all right, you know, well, how do you run your program? You know, what are you doing with this thing? You know, what are you just into your players? Are you going to be good to your players? Or are you going to have this, you know, quote, toxic culture where, you know, things just happen that, you know, aren't normal in the real world? So you're right. I mean, but part of this is also from, you know, Big Ten coaches and Big Ten assistants are going to take other Big Ten jobs. And so it kind of makes the whole league a little bit wacky at times.
And Pete, when you look at the rules, and I shouldn't even call them rules changes that came out in basketball from a couple of days ago, but rule suggestions that the NCAA yep. made, and then we'll see what happens with the NBA and the NBA Players Union. But at a certain point, you know, the discussion will become deeper and louder about whether or not you're going to start seeing some similar things allowed in football with agents and returning to school. What's your sentiment? I mean, because this is something that's been a discussion for a while now. At what point do you think maybe reality could be where that could be coming to the college football scene?
I think it has to. I mean, you know, because when you have a point now where these guys are starting to get smarter and smarter. The latest example of this, look at Darius Geis. Darius Geis played what? He ran one play and then went down for the year with a torn ACL. He's also guaranteed $2.4 million, which my fun stat for the day is that's four times more than Javier Baez is making this year. But if he's at LSU, this crushes his draft stock. And all the talk, well, these guys have insurance. It doesn't work as cut and dry and simple as that. So now he's going to rehab and get paid for it by the Washington Redskins, as opposed to this happening at LSU and really messing up his potential to make a whole lot of money. So at some point, they're going to have to, these players are going to have to take control of the situation. The only power they have is to sit out and not play. So, like, we've had this point now where players don't play in bowl games because they're trying to protect their stock, and there's a little pushback on that, but nothing really. Like, why is Ed Oliver playing this year? Like, why is Rashawn Gary playing this year? Why, if you're a top five overall draft pick, you're just crazy to be playing any more college football than you absolutely have to. And now, especially in environments like, to tie it all into what you were talking about before, when anything can happen with these programs, where even the programs are starting to look successful and then have toxic environments like DJ Durkin, you know, where it's like, okay, if you're going to have a process, a culture of, you know, being intimidated and belittled and stuff, like, forget this. I'm going to go take my stuff and go get ready for the NFL.
Well, it kind of changed when Jalen Smith got hurt a few years ago in the Fiesta Bowl. The next year you saw, I mean, who was
Joey
it?
Bosa.
Joey Bosa got kicked out of that game. But yeah, the next year you saw a couple guys, McCaffrey from Stanford sat out of his bowl game.
Yeah, Leonard Fournette,
sat out. Here. When does that translate to, all right, we're out of contention for a Big Ten or Pac-12 or SEC title, so am I out of contention for playing for Auburn another down that I'm unpaid for, or LSU or Alabama or whoever it might be? When might that transition to happening in the college football ranks?
I think it has to happen, too. I mean, Ant, you can probably speak to the mindset better than obviously I could, but my thought would be, okay, I get the thought that if it's your lifelong dream, you grew up dreaming of playing in like an SEC championship, or grew up dreaming of playing in a big major bowl, or going for a college football national championship. I get it. You know, that's one of those things that even if you're, you know, in the business of a professional, that might be one of those boxes you want checked. I mean, every year around the NCAA tournament time, LeBron James always tweets something out, you know, the great, you know, arguably the greatest player of all time is still wistful saying, ah, I wish I could have just had that experience. You know, so I understand that, but to your point, at some point you have to realize, wait a minute, I'm risking tens of millions of dollars here by playing a game where I'm not getting paid to do this. So again, I think it started, it really kind of started up a few years ago with the Jadeveon Clowney argument, where why is this dude playing any more college football? And I think it's going to happen sooner than later, where some guy is going to realize, as a sophomore, my draft stock is top 10 overall. I'm guaranteed at least 15, 20, however many millions of dollars. All I have to do is not get hurt, and everything will be fine.
And it's an interesting balance with that equation that players will have to figure out, because I do agree. It's likely to continue to happen to some extent within football is more primal in its approach than any other sport, whereas for a basketball player, we'll see, you know, if the one and done is gone in a couple of years, they're talking 2021 or 22 or whatever, but if the one and done is gone, then guys can go straight to the NBA out of high school. Football right now, you're waiting those 3 years, but the perception of what's required of you and this militaristic sort of approach with football players, I think that will wrestle against it a bit, because, you know, the coaches are going to have a certain expectation. Like, it's one thing for McCaffrey and Fournette, where they both had thousands of carries during their college careers, and so, okay, some wear and tear that you want to, you know, sort of allow them to avoid, I guess. But for certain players, maybe who haven't been on the scene quite as long, then the risk will be, well, are you going to be viewed as soft or as giving up on your brethren in a way that maybe the other sports wouldn't suffer that same kind of a perception?
Yeah, the flip side of that, though, is now with the concussion issue, where you could be healthy, you could be great, you could be tough as nails, but all of a sudden you suffer one big giant shot. I mean, that it kind of got played up with Josh Rosen and his draft stock, and I know he fell for a slew of reasons. But here's a guy who was concussed a bunch of times. That's going to be an issue going forward. And obviously the difference between basketball and what's happening there and football is that in basketball, a lot of times you can kind of tell who the future NBA star is going to be in eighth grade. You know, you can tell at a very early age. When it comes to college football, I mean, how many guys, every year during recruiting time, everyone goes through the list and say, hey, look at the top 150 list from 5 years ago, and like three of these guys turned out to be any good. You know, so it really is kind of, you know, crazy how this all works in terms of the maturation of a player into a football player, as opposed to if you are in the basketball system, you are in, and they pretty much know who the top 15 draft picks are going to be a couple of years down the road.
Spending our Friday night with Pete Futek. It's Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Herron, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. This hour being brought to you by Continental Motors. Searching for a Maserati Levante? Search ContinentalMaserati.com for the Continental difference. Week one, 3 weeks away as we sit right here tonight. College Game Day announces this week. It's Notre Dame and Michigan where they're going to open up the season. How big is that for both programs and both of those head coaches who have struggled to be the big one of late?
Massive, more massive, and you know, can argue on both sides. For Michigan, Jim Harbaugh needs a win. He needs a big, big, giant something. I'm kind of a Harbaugh apologist. Last year was supposed to be a massive rebuilding year. They lost 22 starters, and they still had to, you know, reload that thing. And they weren't bad. I mean, they had a couple really close losses that, you know, the Michigan State game, even the Wisconsin game to a certain extent, certainly the bowl game, all could have gone the other way. But you're the Michigan head coach. You're supposed to start winning the big, giant games, and he's not doing that. So if he can beat Notre Dame, that will take a little bit of the pressure off early on. And if they lose, you still got Penn State. You still got Ohio State. You still got Wisconsin to play this year. You still have Michigan State. There's still a whole lot of work to do. And for Notre Dame, you know, if you're not in a conference, obviously, you can't lose two games or else your season's basically over. So if you lose one at home to Michigan, that might be your season unless something really magical happens.
So, Pete, I haven't seen whether or not you've gone public with your preseason, any prognostications for the Power Five. I put mine on Twitter and Instagram, like, I don't know, whatever, a couple weeks ago when all the different media days were going on. So, to me, actually, I picked Michigan in the Big Ten even before this Ohio State scandal was going on and the uncertainty about Urban Meyer. So, I think Michigan wins the Big Ten this year. I think Texas wins the Big 12. And then from there, I go chalk with Washington in the Pac-12, Clemson in the ACC, and Alabama in the SEC. What would be your picks out of the Power Five conferences?
Yeah, I don't quite get the Texas love. And even with this Maryland stuff, I think they're going to get upset in week one. Texas doesn't have the talent. I mean, and I know everyone's just kind of assuming Texas is going to make this jump in year two. Where and how? I mean, it's not crazy because Tom Herman is, you know, known for being able to turn things around relatively fast. But last year was the year. Last year is when Charlie Strong built up into the season where they had the veterans, they had the NFL talent in place, they had everything going for them. That secondary was amazing. Malik Jefferson was a top-shelf linebacker. They had the offensive line. And basically all Tom Herman did is they beat Kansas. That was the difference between 2017 and 2016. Now they still don't have a great quarterback. They got to rebuild that secondary. They've got players coming in. He's recruiting well. But long-winded way of saying, no, I don't think Texas is going to do that. Michigan, you're not crazy. I want to step up and pick something like that. It's going to work.
Shea Patterson.
That defense is still going to be great, and now they have an offense to go along with it. I'm still going to go the Ohio State-Wisconsin winner is going to get in. This is a better Badger team than last year, but they have a better schedule this year. In terms of finding teams to watch out for out there, Alabama's chalk mainly because they're Alabama and they have an easy schedule. I mean, they're going to just blow through this thing. They don't play anybody who's all that great this year. And then the ACC, Clemson, they're obviously the best team by far. The problem is the other 13 teams in that league on the right day can beat them. Look at Syracuse last year. Mm-hmm. That was arguably the worst team in the conference, and they were able to beat Clemson. I mean, who's the worst team this year? Virginia? They've got a defense in Bryce Perkins, a quarterback. I mean, Boston College is good. Duke is good. You know, Syracuse is going to be good. So they could lose a game or even two in this thing.
Speaking with Pete Futek, publisher of College Football News, tonight on 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you. And with Urban Meyer and Ohio State, obviously the story of the offseason in college football, say it's like a four-game suspension for Urban Meyer. What does that mean for the outlook of Ohio State and their chances Big Ten-wise? I guess there's only one Big Ten game there against Rutgers. That shouldn't even count for a game. But Big Ten-wise and kind of national outlook-wise, if that's the case.
Four games doesn't mean anything. Rutgers, by the way, is going to be kind of good this year, and they're probably going to go to a bowl. But you're right. They're not going to lose to Oregon State. They're not going to lose to Rutgers. They do have to go to TCU, though. And that's one of those games where if Urban Meyer is suspended, that's just one you're going to have to say, hey, guys, let's just get there and figure it out. I hate putting controversies into football terms. Mm-hmm. in football analysis and wins and losses. But in this case, I'm going to do that. You know how this rolls. The teams rally. Either they go one of two ways. Either they're 18 to 22-year-old college kids. They don't really deal with Urban Meyer all that much, and they just don't care. They just want to, you know, go play football and then go play, back and play Fortnite and go, you know, hit on girls and stuff. Or they just say, okay, you know, the world's out to get us. We're going to extra concentrate now. And that stuff works for college teams. I don't think it's going to matter a lick. If he's fired, then that obviously changes everything.
Do you have, because my energy, I guess, about where I think it's going continues to change by the day. He put in, this is just how things work in our society. He puts the statement out. He admits some level of wrongdoing. And now it seems like the public perception is starting to swing back in his favor. So I'm not as confident that he's not going to be the Ohio State coach anymore. What's your sense on that?
I am with you, you know, and I'm not saying this is a good thing or it's okay. Mm-hmm. I think what Ohio State's doing is they're just playing four corners here because people just don't have the bandwidth for it. I mean, you can only be so angry for so long if you're a fan, if you're just natural fans. Like you said, we're 2 weeks away from week zero. You know, we're in the NFL training camp. People are doing their fantasy drafts. You know, yes, you can be kind of mad if you're, you know, against, you know, Urban Meyer and shake your fist and stuff. But at the end of the day, if they keep him, what's really going to happen? There'll be, you know, some protests. There'll be some bad, you know, columns. How can this happen? You know, how can he be, you know, part of the whole Ohio State's, you know, sold out. But, people are just going to watch anyway. And these things just kind of look like, I still don't know, for example, how Tom Izzo is still the Michigan State head coach. I don't know how Sean Miller is still the Arizona head basketball coach. Somehow, coaches tend to survive in all this. And as awful as this is, and I'm not trying to rank, you know, horrible scandals and things, but he's not going to be toxic like Art Briles or anybody related to Penn State. Even if he gets fired, he's hired again in 2 years by Notre Dame or the Cleveland Browns or something. But like you said, I think he lasts this. I think he makes it. I think he somehow survives through this, and you know, he goes through a whole bunch of, you know, sensitivity training things and things like that. And I think he survives.
Speaking with Pete Futek here on 670 The Score, coach's poll came out in the last week or so. What are your impressions of that? Most overloved, most underloved, underappreciated in that whole thing? What did you kind of take of that?
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me. I can't remember who I really didn't. I mean, it's fine. You know, basically, you know who the top four teams are. And it's kind of the problem with college football, especially after last year, where the only reason Alabama got into the college football playoff is because it's Alabama. And, you know, that's the quirk of the system where, you know, had Wisconsin scored in the Big Ten championship in the final drive against Ohio State, Alabama's not even in the playoff last year. So this year, you don't even really need to play it. The four best teams are Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, and Ohio State. So it doesn't matter what their records are. Those are the actual four best teams in college football. Now, everyone else, Oklahoma's fine. Wisconsin's fine. They're going to be out right there. I think the overloved teams are somebody like UCF, where, all right, you know, yes, they went through the, you know, their easy schedule last
defending
year.
Defending national champs, dude.
Exactly. They are the national champs. And they beat an Auburn team that had no interest in playing in that game. And now they're ranked. Okay.
You're
fine,
such an
really.
Elitist.
I am. I absolutely am. I am absolutely a believer that, hey, anybody can beat a good team once. But oh, great. Now beat Michigan State. Then beat Iowa. Then beat, you know, Penn State. Then go. You know, you can't do it week in and week out if you're an American Athletic Conference team.
With week one, you mentioned the Michigan-Notre Dame game. To me, the biggest game of week one is that Washington-Auburn game because of the Pac-12 only having one bowl win and just the perception of that conference and how it's waned over the last couple of seasons. What's your sense for what would end up coming out from the aftershock of that game, regardless of who ends up winning it?
Oh, without question. The most important game, probably. You know, the Pac-12 has to have this. Like you said, just miserable. Not only bad in the bowl games, but they didn't have a team in the college football playoff, which means there really was no excuse. They had all the teams in decent bowl games. They didn't have to even move a bowl slot up, and they were bad. So between the, you know, the world not caring about the conference because nobody gets the Pac-12 network, sorry, Ann, and Pac-12 after dark, you know, it's half the country's not watching their games. You need a reason to watch this.
You know you stay awake, Pete. You know you're up.
But I'm the one. I'm weird that way. I have to. I'm quirky like that. But Khalil Tate's going to be a reason to watch the conference. Bryce Love's going to be a reason. Oregon's going to be fun. Chip Kelly's team's going to be fun. It's a fun conference. And half the world isn't going to care if Washington gets drilled in this opener by Auburn. Because like you said, this is a team that should be in the college football playoff. There is no weakness on this Husky team. This is a better team than the one that went a couple years ago. They should come out. I know it's a road game. I know Auburn's going to fill the house. But that is a game, Washington, Pac-12, you got to win this one.
He's not wrong, Shep.
No?
He's not wrong.
Well, no. It's the history of the Pac-12 if your team is not USC. You stumble up once, you get no love. You're USC, you get every excuse thrown out at for you that there is imaginable. Pete, who's your Heisman, I guess, your favorite to win it? And who should
list.
If you're in the gambling arena looking for a long shot with shot, who might it be?
I always in the really boring take the field guy. However, obviously the favorites right now. Who's going to be the star player on a national championship level team? So, whoever wins that Alabama job, obviously Tua Tagovailoa is going to be right there. Except he's not going to have the stats. It's going to have to be you really love this guy because he's the leader. My dark horse, who I think could rise up and be that guy, Trevor Lawrence, the Clemson quarterback. Freshman, I know, true freshmen don't win these things. He's going to be the number one overall draft pick in 3 years. He is the best quarterback on the roster. He's probably the best quarterback in the ACC right now. He's on a heater of a team, and I think he's going to have one of those years where he's going to come out and from day one, he's going to be like, oh, okay, here we go. He's my very, very big sleeper in all this. I don't think, for example, Bryce Love is going to get the numbers again. He's got a lot of stats taken away from him. Not enough people are going to see Khalil Tate. Those are probably the two best guys. Jonathan Taylor is not going to get the ball enough around the goal line. So it's going to be as wide open a race as we probably have seen in a long, long time here.
Pete, appreciate the time. As always, can check out your work at College Football News. You're the publisher there at Pete Futek and Twitter as well. Appreciate the time. We'll be checking you out all fall long.
Hey, Ed, I think Iowa needs you back there. I don't think you violated any team rules there for week one.
Yeah, they're going to be a little bit light on the line of scrimmage when they take on Northern Illinois on both sides of the ball. I'll see if I can gather up some knee cartilage for them, I guess.
Later, guys.
Take it easy. Pete Futek there, College Football News, the publisher of that. This segment brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter, 312-644-6767. If you'd like to chime in on some of the college football conversation there. You ready for it? You're going to be making your weekly commutes to the West Coast and back again here before too long. You ready for it to hit you like a ton of bricks?
My week one, I've got two games week one. That opening Thursday night, I'm in Salt Lake City for a game at Utah. Then the second game that week, so Friday morning, I fly from Salt Lake City to Eugene, where I'm going to have Oregon. And to me, a player who's not maybe opening the season in the Heisman Trophy discussion, at least not that deeply, Oregon's quarterback Justin Herbert. Looking forward to watching him in that opening game for them, because when he's been healthy, he's been just spectacular. And the numbers he's going to put up in their offense, and they're switching a bit to more of a pistol set where there is going to be some downhill running as well. But he's like 6'6", like 230. He's just got, you know, a thick, muscular kind of build to him, and he's extremely mobile for a guy of his size. So he's going to put up some big numbers for Oregon this year, and they're my dark horse in the Pac-12 North. Washington, hands down the best team in the Pac-12 this year, but if it's not Washington, it's going to be either Stanford or Oregon in the North. And if Justin Herbert stays healthy, that just all the more increases the chances for the Ducks there. So he would be another guy I'd throw into the Heisman Trophy discussion, again, if he stays healthy for Oregon this year. So I'll have both those teams, Utah, I picked them to win the South Division. A lot of folks pick USC. I think Utah's going to come out of the South, and Oregon is my dark horse in the North. So I'm excited about my first two games I got there in week one.
Yeah, I was expecting, or at least hoping for Pete to give me like a big-time winner. Trevor Lawrence listed as 15-1 right now on Bovada.lv to win the Heisman. It's a nice payday. I was hoping for more like 40, 50-1 and be able to, run off into the sunset and not have to worry about working anymore.
I mean, I guess if you would, you could, is JT Daniels the USC true freshman who may start? I think JT Daniels has a better shot at starting than Trevor Lawrence, even though Trevor Lawrence was a more highly regarded prospect. But JT Daniels is the USC true freshman who reclassified. So he was supposed to be going into his high school senior year right now. He finished all his credits, so he wasn't able to be with USC during spring ball, reclassified, got his credits done, and now he's joined them. He was there during summer workouts. He's a California kid anyway. But so now fall camp is the first time he's actually on the field practicing with the Trojans. There's a couple of older guys, Matt Fink, Jack Sears, are two quarterbacks who've been in the system for multiple years now with Clay Helton and T. Martin calling the plays there. JT Daniels, I don't know that he'll be the starter from day one, from the opening game, but it looks like he's going to be in a situation, especially when you think of this new redshirt rule in college football where you can play up to four games before you actually burn your redshirt. So I think JT Daniels is going to get some run at some point, probably sooner than later for USC this year. He's another one who you could view as a super dark horse Heisman guy, but I think like Pete was saying, for a true freshman to win it, that would be fairly unprecedented.
Yeah, and I don't see Daniels being on there as of yet, and you can't even bet the field on Bovada.lv. Going to have to get in somebody's ear about that. 312.
Dwayne Haskins? Ohio State's quarterback.
He's got the water-carrying Mike Chen.
He's the best pro prospect they've had at quarterback since Art Schleister, which is like 35, 40 years.
Okay, and how'd that work out for old Art?
Hey, Art had some issues with gambling, but hey, you know, it happens.
Yeah, Mike Chen, who's going to be out on the injured reserve as a score producer for carrying water for Ohio State and Urban Meyer behind the glass. 2-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. 834, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you tonight up until 10 o'clock. That's when Julie DeCaro will be here until midnight this evening. Spent a little bit of time talking some college football tonight here on The Score, as tomorrow, 3 weeks from tomorrow, it will be opening college football Saturday, and I know Big Ant across the glass from me will be very busy because of that. He'll be flying Midwest to West Coast on a weekly basis and eating up all those flight miles, but enjoying the hell out of it on the Pac-12 network.
Eating up flight miles, eating up all kinds of foods. I'll get my ant bites going again.
That's the important stuff.
It's very important because when I'm flying out there, I communicate with the folks who are on campus, the students there, and I just put up polls every week on Twitter and ask folks where I should eat at when I go to each individual school. And they usually have some pretty good restaurant suggestions once me and the Pac-12 Network put our Ant Bites Twitter poll up. So usually I end up checking out a spot that I haven't been to before. I try to make sure we steer once we get to the point where we've gotten enough suggestions in. And then once the poll's going to go up, I try to make sure there's spots I haven't actually eaten at before because I like trying new hole-in-the-wall joints. I don't want chains. I don't want to waste meals when I'm on the road. Let me try something new, something with good recommendations for food. And for the most part, people out west tend to steer me in the right direction.
Yeah, so you go to Seattle to cover a Washington game, and the poll includes, like, Perkins. So you're not going to Perkins?
Yeah, right. That's really disappointing when stuff like that ends up coming up. Or, you know, like, well, yeah, go to Ruth's Chris. They've got great – well, I know Ruth's Chris is going to have a good steak, but that's not where I want to go when I'm on the road. I don't want to go to TGI Fridays when I'm in some college town. Sure, I can go there and get the lava cake. I'm interested in lava cake, but take me somewhere I haven't been. That's what I want to do when I'm traveling.
Yeah, and so what's the best, not necessarily best food in the Pac-12, but if I'm going to take a road trip, I like seeing venues, I like seeing experiencing cool venues. What's the one stadium, one game day environment that I have to see in the Pac-12?
Okay, well, you just mentioned Seattle. As far as just the – I thought you were going food for a second, but as far as the game day environment itself –
I can find good food anyway. Let's face it. I tend to like Mexican food the most, so I'm guessing – any of the Arizona teams probably going to be my go-to for that. But
LA.
I'm gonna find plenty of seafood in Seattle. And probably anywhere you take me in the Pac-12, I'll find something I enjoy.
Yeah, but for game day atmosphere itself, to go to Husky Stadium, where especially right now where Washington is really good, it's a unique environment because the stadium itself is right there on the water. They're on Lake Washington, so folks will literally ride their boat up. And there's a dock right outside the football stadium. Folks will ride their boat up, and they'll tailgate on Lake Washington outside the stadium and spend the whole morning out there on the water. Now, there's gravel and road, and there's land available, too. So there's a parking lot where folks are tailgating also. But on the other side across from the parking lot is Lake Washington. And it's not quite Lake Michigan, but it's big, takes up a bunch of space, and there's folks on boats sailgating, as they call it out there. So you can do that in Knoxville, Tennessee as well, but there's not a lot of major college football stadiums where you can literally ride a boat up to the stadium and exit and just stroll right in for a major college football game. So I would say Washington is one that stands out just from the uniqueness of the atmosphere and the fact that folks are there, they're energetic, they're into it. You know, by contrast, you know, a team like Stanford that's been so good since David Shaw has been there and Jim Harbaugh, you know, while he was there and Shaw was his offensive coordinator, you're going to see great football if you go see Stanford, but not necessarily the best atmosphere unless there's a really big game in town and USC is bringing their fans or Notre Dame's bringing their fans too. So you'll run into a little bit of that in the Pac-12 with certain schools where their fans aren't necessarily as rabid as Big Ten fans or SEC fans. So Stanford, you're better off. You want to see the Stanford brand of football, catch them on a road game. If they're going to the Coliseum to play USC or something like that, then you'll have a better shot at really getting one of those great atmospheres. But
so what you're trying to say is Stanford is the White Sox of the Pac-12.
Well, except they're really good and have been really good for a long time. Yeah, but as far as just whether or not people consistently show up, there'd be a comparison you can draw there, yeah.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski, 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. Mountain Greenwood and Dell has some college football thoughts. What's up, Dell?
Hey, how are you, sir?
Good.
Love the show. Love that we're talking about some Midwest teams for a change. I want to be an Illinois fan so bad, but they are so terrible. They haven't been relevant since Jeff George years. Why can't they be respectful program like Northwestern? What is it going to take?
I will divert this one and appreciate the telephone call there, Dell, because I was unaware Illinois even had a football team. Apparently, their games air here on 670 The Score. I was unfamiliar with that. I'll give this to Herb Lawrence because, like Mike does for Ohio State, he'll carry any water for that. Herb's been telling me since I began here in 2006 how great the Illini are going to be. And he was right away because in 07, they were excellent the following year.
Was that when Jeff George was there? Quarterback?
That was a Regis Benn.
Okay.
Who else was there? The big corner that they had that ended up.
Vontae Davis.
Vontae Davis was excellent.
Juice Williams.
Solid Sharp team back Hall. Then. Herb's been telling me ever since then that the Illini are going to be great. And one out of 12 times, I think he's been right about that. So, Herb, why are the Illini going to be great in 2018?
I don't know if they're going to be great. They're going to be better than they were last year.
Well, they're what, 2-10?
Yes, 2-10. I saw the last win versus West Kentucky.
Grand step great they're victory. Taking this year.
No, I'm just saying, like, if you want to be a Illini fan, be a Illini fan. Don't come when the wins come.
Mm.
Dell, if you want to jump on to the Northwestern, enjoy them. Apparently, they're Chicago's Big Ten team. Are they? Living in Evanston?
It's word on the street.
That's weird. but, yeah, if you want to be a Illini fan, jump on now because Lovey's building something special up. Maybe not going to be great.
What's something that's special?
He did say something special. That was the term.
He's building up something special.
What is special?
When we go to multiple consecutive years of bowl games.
Didn't Ron Zook just do that and he got chased out?
A lot. And we turn into an Iowa type of program.
Oh.
Didn't Ron Zook take them to a Rose Bowl?
Like 7-8 games a year.
Not big time bowls, but.
Hey, man.
Texas Bowl, bum ass bowl against other bums.
Yeah, but he got fired. Yeah, they were dumb.
That's what I'm saying.
It's kind of like
that's what they were at.
No, it parallels.
And you couldn't wait to chase that man away.
It literally parallels what the Bears did and where they're at now, where they fired Lovie Smith because he didn't reach a standard that they wanted him to reach, and then subsequently that team has been horrible. Same thing with Ron Zook. They fired that man because they thought that 6-6 wasn't good enough for Illinois, and going to bowl games wasn't good enough for Illinois, and now the bottom's falling out. Lovey has have to build up from what Tim Beckman and Bill Cubitt had done to this program.
No doubt about that part,
and so
because
now
Beckman was nothing short of atrocious. Then you bring in not even off the field, but on the practice field stuff that he had as well, and it's a disaster that he left Illinois with. But
theoretically,
I'm asking this,
I'm
second, not...
This is the second year of Lovey's program. He came in so late in that first year.
Sure.
He did not recruit really any of those players in that first year.
Like, I'm not trying to be a jerk when I say this, but I'm legit asking a question.
He's about to be a jerk, Herb.
But I'm a 17-year-old, 18-year-old getting recruited to play college football across, not even a prime recruit, but a big enough recruit that Big Ten teams are interested in me, or some of the top-tier MAC teams are saying, you can come be a star here. Play for me here.
That'd be like an Anthony Herron level recruit.
Sure.
Yeah,
I'm Anthony Herron.
Okay, yeah.
I'm Anthony Herron in 2018. I'm high school Anthony Herron in 2018.
Just up and down the Big Ten, some Big 12, all the matches, just foaming at the mouth trying to get you.
Honest question, why do I give a single damn about anything Lovie Smith sells me?
He's been there.
Been
he's been to the NFL, coached there.
Sure, but it's not unique to I mean, to be a head coach in the NFL, maybe, but
yes, yes.
I'm playing
and
college
also,
football.
As a African-American head coach, it's a different look than most coaches in the Big Ten. And also, Hardy Nickerson's there. Great linebacker in the NFL.
I don't know who Hardy Nickerson is if I'm 17.
Well, your parents do. And you're speaking to parents, too. You're like, hey, I know who Lovie Smith is.
So it's like the DePaul basketball recruiting pitch is what you're giving me.
I'm saying you asked me a question.
I'm trying to walk with you, and I'm struggling to.
No, they played the most freshmen in major college football last year. So, hey, you come to Illinois. You're playing Big Ten football immediately. There's no red shirts here. You're playing. You go to Ohio State, enjoy yourself for 2 years when you're on that bench.
The new redshirt rule will allow that, though. Four games they're allowed to play.
Yeah, but you're playing every game, though. Bennett Williams comes from California, where his dad played college football with Hardy Nickerson. He was a three-star recruit, under-recruited. He comes to Illinois. He leaves as a freshman All-American, or he's a freshman All-American. That's how you say, hey, this is what we're building. Bennett Williams, and we're bringing other people in. The number one player in Missouri is coming next year, Isaiah Williams. We're bringing other people in from Texas. We got the top two defensive tackles from Texas coming in this year.
Yeah.
Next year, we got one of the best cornerbacks in the whole nation from Texas, Marquise Beeston, coming in. These people are buying into our system. Now we just need you.
Hey, that man's name is going to be Marquise Leaston by the end of it.
You'll be seeing Ant Harrell will be broadcasting that game, that All-American game, and he'll be seeing Marquise Beeston's like, that's an Illinois player.
And he's
going
to take his Illini hat and be like, it was cool to commit way back in the day. This Texas Longhorns hat, though, fits me a little bit better, and burnt orange looks better than blue and orange on
me. We're building up a
what
nice
he's gonna do.
Practice facility.
Exactly. I was hoping
next
you were going to hit that new facilities
got a,
on the way.
2019,
like cool,
it's
Northwestern got
art.
One already, and they already debuted it.
Yeah.
But, I'm just trying to be the negative recruiter, the other recruiting coach that...
Then you got to live in Evanston.
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
Play for that terrible coach.
Yeah, that Chicago is like all of 5 miles away. That just sounds awful.
I mean, have you ever been to... driven down from like that street from Evanston into Chicago? Like that first
taking
street?
Taking the red line.
In Rogers Park? Like Jonquil Terrace? A little tough. So enjoy yourself in Evanston. Right. Or as I call it, Chicago.
That's right. Love Illini, water carrying Herb there. That's Herb Lawrence. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Heron with you, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. What's the most demoralizing thing that can happen to you as an athlete on a field in a team sport? I want to get into that a little bit because it pertains to something that happens in the Cubs game, at least in my eyes today. Bryce Harper in town, Cubs and Nationals discussion as well coming up for you. And anything we've discussed as well, college football thoughts, Bears thoughts that we started the show with, 312-644-6767. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Heron with you on a segment being brought to you by Northwestern Football. Hey, Herb, the Wildcats have the best home schedule in the nation this fall. That's hard to argue against. They have Michigan, Notre Dame, many more at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now. NUSports.com is where you go to get them. We'll cover all of those things coming up. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Heron with you on The Score. 851 Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Heron with you tonight. Taking you through until 10 o'clock. Julie DeCaro, just saw her walk by. She's getting ready for her show at 10 o'clock this evening. Lots of Bears in the first hour. Spent a good hour here talking some college football and what to expect there. Pete Futek joined us to start off this hour. Next hour, the first place team in town that's playing for another title. We haven't really gotten into a whole heck of a lot, if at all, even this evening. Gets a win today, the Cubs over the Nationals, 3-2 in a game. They're looking like they're going to get no hit there for quite some time.
Yeah.
And they walk away victorious on what was a fun, thrilling, pretty exciting game on a Friday afternoon in mid-August at Wrigley Field.
I couldn't quite tell. Did us trying to jinx the no-hitter on Twitter, did that work or not? Because he's still left with a no-hitter.
I
but
know.
Then they finally started getting some hits.
Yeah, Jeremy Hellickson did leave the game with a no-hitter.
Uh-huh.
I was hoping that what would happen is that his stat line would read that he didn't allow any hits but still got hit with a loss. Now, his run was the tying run.
Uh-huh.
Winning run ended up coming across an inning later. But I was hoping that his stat line would read no hits, six innings plus pitched, or whatever it ended up being, and have him still on the hook there for the loss.
That'd make for a
because that'd just be a weird,
interesting little factoid.
Who was this? Was there a Sox pitcher in the early 90s that threw the no hit? It happened, I believe, in a minor league game earlier this week because they have the weird rules of extra innings beginning with runners on second base or second and third base, and I think it happened earlier this week. That's a different case because it's you have different rules once the extra innings hit. But didn't it happen to a Sox pitcher in the early 90s that he threw a no-hitter and got hit with a loss? I want to say like 1990 or so.
Andy Hawkins of the Yankees got a loss versus the Sox. I think he gave up a walk, and then the left fielder dropped the ball and scored a couple runs. I think they scored 4 runs in that inning or something like that. But that guy got a no-hitter, but it was taken away because he only pitched 8 innings because the Sox didn't have to bat in the bottom of the ninth.
That's a tough one. Yeah, Andy Hawkins, 4-0 against the Sox, got hit with in a losing effort there. Apparently it's happened 5 times in baseball history. Jared Weaver and Jose Arredondo, 2008, the Angels threw a no-hitter, combined no-hitter, and lost to the Dodgers 1-0. Matt Young lost while throwing a no-hitter in 1992. Indians beating the Red Sox in that one. Andy Hawkins, as you said. Stu Miller and Steve Barber combined to throw a no-hitter for the Orioles. They lost in 1967 against the Tigers, and it's only happened 1 time in the National League. Ken Johnson, never heard of him, but he threw one for the Colt 45s and lost to the Reds 1-0. So the Colt 45s, who I guess are the Astros now, I was going to say they don't even exist. They changed their name like 2 years in. But yeah, that's your five. I don't know why I thought I remembered a White Sox pitcher doing it. I have no clue why. It must have been because the White Sox did it to Andy Hawkins back in 1990. 312-644-6767. I do want to go somewhere with the Cubs game today, though, because I want all of our listeners, if you're in your car right now, if you're driving home here on a Friday night, hell, if you're just driving out here for a Friday night, when you think of like,
oh, yeah, true,
not most disrespectful, but demoralizing things that can happen to you in a team sport, what are they? I don't want to be like, all right, you're down by 30 and someone throws a alley-oop off the backboard of themselves and dunks the ball to go up by 32 and just laugh at you in your face when you're getting run off the court. But like demoralizing things, things that just have you questioning your will, that just break you at the end of the day in a sporting arena. I want to go over some of those because I think there was a prime example of one in the Cubs game today. 312-644-6767. That's the call with your examples of the most demoralizing things to happen on an athletic field to you or for your team. We'll discuss those in the 9 o'clock hour. Cubs and Bryce Harper, he's in town, so we have to discuss that elephant in the room as well. It's Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Herron with you until 10 o'clock. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.